It's not hard to figure out why war movies have been a Hollywood staple for decades. They're intense. They're a great testing ground for courage and character. And in recent years, they've gotten grittier and more realistic. Consider the famous opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, when American soldiers storm the beaches of Normandy.
Who's in command here? You are, sir! Sergeant Horvath!
Sir!
You recognize where we are?
Where we're supposed to be, but no one else is!
Cultural critic Martha Bayliss says war movies are not just exciting. She told Ann Strange Champs they often have a strange beauty, even in the midst of carnage.
It's the intensity of feeling alive. It's the intensity of experience in the moment. I mean, I've never been in combat, and I'm aware that I'm handling something here which has a very negative history. There's a kind of cult of violence, and there's a cult of war that runs all the way through fascism, and it runs all the way through terrorism. There's a kind of, you know, the intensity of that moment when you're very, very close to death and you're close to violence. My concern, however, is how that experience, which I don't think you can deny, how it's connected with a larger sense of what Frank Capra once called why we fight, a larger sense of what this is for and what the purpose of it is.
Because if there's not that moral backdrop, doesn't a filmmaker run the risk of simply glorifying war?
Exactly. It's interesting, some of the most powerful films that I've seen in the last few years, one would be a little-known film with a terrible title. It was called When Trumpets Fade. Terrible title. It was about a battle in the Hürtgen Forest in November 44 in Germany, and it's very intense. It's a little bit like The Thin Red Line. It's very intense. It has this kind of heightened sense of reality, a combination of horror and amazement that comes with these experiences. But because, like The Thin Red Line, it's about a World War II battle, they don't have to go to any great lengths to remind us why these soldiers are there, what they're fighting for, what the cause is.
So it sounds like you're saying that the World War II films, in some ways, providing that moral backdrop, the question of why we fight, is easier in World War II because we have coded that as a classic good versus evil fight.
Right.
But so Vietnam must present a much different sort of challenge.
Yes.
Somebody once wrote, hell is the impossibility of reason. That's what this place feels like, hell. We get up at 5 a.m., hump all day, camp around 4 or 5, dig a foxhole, eat, then put out an all-night ambush or a three-man listening post in the jungle. It's scary because nobody tells me how to do anything because I'm new. Nobody cares about the new guys. They don't even want to know your name.
The thing that went on with Vietnam movies, two things that went on, really in the 80s when the Vietnam movies began to be really big, Platoon and Full Metal Jacket, coming after The Deer Hunter, those films focused on unit cohesion is the term for this bonding between the soldiers. It's a sociological term. We've all heard it explained by now that soldiers don't fight for a larger cause. Soldiers fight for one another. You know, you fight for your buddies and you fight for your unit. That idea got seized upon by Oliver Stone and Kubrick in these Vietnam movies because they wanted to somehow make the soldiers look good and make them look heroic, but they didn't want to endorse the war. And I think from that legacy, we've taken the idea of unit cohesion to a kind of ridiculous extreme where you have a Vietnam movie made in 2002 by Mel Gibson, of all people, which is probably the only gung-ho pro-Vietnam War movie that's been made since John Wayne. And it's called We Were Soldiers. It's about the Yadrang Valley battle in 1965.
I'll never forgive myself. For what, sir? That my men died and I didn't.
And at the end of that film, you have Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, who was the commander, saying they didn't fight for flag. They didn't fight for country. In the end, they fought for each other. So even in this pro-Vietnam film, you have an interpretation of why they were fighting, which has only to do with the unit. They were only fighting for each other.
But now, what's wrong with that? Because I think that's what a lot of soldiers would tell you. I think even soldiers in the current Iraq conflict will tell you that once they're there, the people they care most about, and yes, the people they're fighting for, are their buddies and their unit.
Sure, but it only can go so far, because at a certain point, the shooting stops and the soldiers are sitting around. They do think about what they're doing and what the purpose of the thing is in the larger sense of things. I think it's kind of an insult to soldiers to sort of portray them as these little automatons who are just fighting for the unit, and you can put them anywhere and they'll fight no matter what. They won't.
Do you have a favorite movie about Vietnam, a movie that you feel got closest of any of them to showing it the way it really was?
Well, I like Hamburger Hill for these reasons. It's a movie by John Irvin. It got eclipsed by Platoon. I think they came out about the same time. It showed the difference between the soldiers being alienated from the immediate objective that they were given to do. Hamburger Hill was, of course, a famous battle where they had to go up the same damn hill over and over again and take it, and then they had to withdraw, and then they had to take it again. And it was incredibly destructive. An amazing number of soldiers died in that battle. And there was a sense of futility about the whole thing. And they really did not like those orders. But what Irvin did was he didn't portray that as principled or political opposition to the Vietnam War.
When I get back, I'm never leaving it again. Flush toilets, hot showers. I want a corn dog with mustard. I want some of that free love I'm always hearing about. Man, I'm always hearing about that.
Yeah, they love everybody back there. Cats, dogs, niggers, spicks, kikes, wops, mix. Yeah, and they're real fond of Luke the Gook back home. Y'all can believe that. They love everybody but you.
Now, there were soldiers in Vietnam who did oppose the war, but there were soldiers in Vietnam who did not oppose the war. They just opposed the way it was being fought, and they felt that it was being fought badly. To me, there's a distinction between soldiers who don't like the orders they're getting and soldiers who are against the war itself. And both Oliver Stone and Kubrick kind of blurred that distinction because they were basically trying to make anti-war films.
Is there a particular scene in Hamburger Hill that comes to mind?
Yeah, it's when they finally get to the top of the hill and one of the soldiers who survives just sits down in exhaustion, the way he just sort of drops in place under a tree, I think, one of the few trees that are left standing. And he takes a sip from his canteen. And another soldier walks by him, and they look at each other. And then he just sits there, and the film ends with him just sitting there looking back down the hill. And the only sound you hear is the wind blowing. It's very bone-chilling, very powerful.
We haven't talked about another kind of film that I think used to be made and maybe still is. There's a kind of war movie that is essentially a recruitment movie, isn't there? I'm thinking about Top Gun as the most recent example.
Right. Yeah. Well, I call those Boys with Toys movies.
In case some of you wonder who the best is, they're up here on this plaque on the wall. The best driver in his reel from each class has his name on it. And they have the option to come back here to be Top Gun instructors.
I guess the recruiting film that I saw most recently that I think was really little more than that was probably Black Hawk Down, which completely fudged the purpose of why they were in Somalia. All you knew was that a very expensive helicopter had fallen down into a very bad place and that they had a lot of incredible high-tech stuff so that the other folks could locate the helicopter and maybe help the guy. And it's Ridley Scott's tribute to Donald Rumsfeld, I guess. I don't know. But it's
well, it's another buddy movie, isn't it? It's about, well, it's the purpose of war is to rescue your buddies.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, and it's also you with your toys are rescuing your buddies with their toys. The end of it is just amazing. They're floating on air. It looks like it is a recruiting poster. They're smiling, and the population of Mogadishu is sort of parting before them and sort of, overwhelmed by how wonderful they are. I seriously doubt that happened. That's how I saw it. I thought it was just an appalling cop-out in terms of dealing with why the U.S. was in there in the first place.
So much death. What can men do against such reckless hate?
Ride out and meet them.
For death and glory.
For Rohan.
Yes. The horn of Helm Hammerhand shall sound in the deep. One last time. Yes!
I'm curious, I wonder what you think of some of the fantasy movies like The Lord of the Rings, which are full of those really epic big battle scenes.
Mm-hmm.
those in some ways are harking back to that war as glorious and heroic kind of vision. Yes, I mean, do you consider those war movies?
When we started to read the Iliad, I said to my students, I said, well, you know, how many of you have seen the Fellowship of the Rings and the great battles with the orcs and all that? And of course, they'd all seen that and any number of other sort of Star Wars and fantasy films where the forces of light and the forces of darkness meet on the battlefield with endless special effects. I said, well, I'll tell you something about Homer and the battle between the Greeks and the Trojans. There isn't a light side and a dark side. Both sides are depicted in this kind of tragic sense. Both sides have heroes. Both sides are seen as human. And the destruction is meted out to both sides kind of equally. And they were quite taken aback by that because their sort of, you know, folklore image of great battles is that it's the, you know, light versus darkness. It's the good guys versus the bad guys.
I'm wondering if there are any modern day sort of inheritors of the Iliad.
Sort of a tragic view of it instead of a good guys, bad guys?
Well, there's a movie that came out kind of recently, post 9/11, called The War Within, which I think does something of what you're saying the Iliad does, kind of attempts to show you the world from both protagonists' viewpoint.
Yeah, I thought The War Within was a remarkable film, and it's about a young Pakistani who is a student in Paris, gets rendered to Pakistan where he's tortured. Uncle Sam is responsible for sending him there. So he signs up to be a suicide bomber. Now, I have a contact in the FBI who tells me people who are tortured never become suicide bombers. It's not the profile. At any rate, for the dramatic device, he's a rather sophisticated guy with an education, but he comes to New York with the intention of blowing up Madison Square Garden. And the story evolves because he stays with a boyhood friend of his from Pakistan who is, you know, your sort of happy, semi-assimilated immigrant to the United States who's raising a family and has a very beautiful sister who turns out to be this young man's first love. And it sets up a set of expectations in the heart of every American that this young man will realize what a great place America is. And he will kind of drop the bomb thing and he'll, you know, he'll come around. And at the same time, you see him pulling back. He's not having any. He will not be drawn in, and he maintains his conviction. It's done with a kind of blood-curdling, you know, emotional kind of refusal to give you what you want. You want this young man to sort of come around, and he just won't. And I won't give away the ending, but you can see where we're going with this.
What if the Goldmans came to your house one day, and they said, get out of this house. We're taking this house. Now you have to live in the backyard.
They wouldn't. My dad wouldn't let them.
But they come with the police and with guns.
But they already have a house.
It doesn't matter. They want this one. And they say, you can't live in the yard anymore. We found oil under the ground and it's very valuable and we need it. What would you do?
I'd fight them.
This is what they're doing to our brothers and sisters across the world, honey. This is a rule of Islam. When my brother suffers in the world, I suffer also.
A scene from the recent film The War Within. Martha Bayliss is a cultural critic who teaches at Boston College. She spoke with Anne Strange-Chips.